Well, hey, everybody. My name is Mark, and welcome to this week's Menlo Midweek Podcast. This week, Phil and I are wrapping up our Wonderfully Made series. This has been a very challenging series for us and for our congregation. We are just so proud of the way that everyone has leaned in and contributed to this conversation. I mean, you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, how many questions have been sorted through and either got answered here on the weekend or in some of the events that we have during the week. So again, thank you so much for being a community that's leaning in and caring. And we just want to continue that spirit. So from here on out, if you'd like to send in your questions around anything that we're talking about, we'd love to encourage you to do so. You can text us at 650-600-0402. That comes to us and the team here. And big shout out to the team as well that did an amazing job helping field these questions and the team that's helping record, edit, and produce these podcasts too. So big shout out. Thank you to all those that are helping out. We have space on the team if you'd like to join us. And now let's go ahead and jump into today's podcast. Well, welcome everybody to the Menlo Midweek Podcast. My name is Mark.
And my name is Phil.
Yes. I still feel like I miss Jess, and I think I will for a while.
Yeah, is that ever going to end?
That's... But I like you introducing yourself as Phil.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
And I like that the joke of you being lead pastor Phil as your title has kind of subsided, but I feel like I kind of need to bring it back
a
little bit.
Sure. No, that's perfect. Thank you so much.
You're really welcome. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You seem extraordinarily chill today, and I want to say that's because of a lot of things. So why don't you let people know why you're leaned back, you're reclined, you got an iced coffee.
Yeah, I do want to make it very clear to anyone watching on YouTube. It's in a glass, so it could be like, what are you drinking at 2 in the afternoon? It is iced coffee, I promise. That's all it is. Mark can test it if he wants to. But we just finished 5 weeks in our Wonderfully Made series, not just at Menlo and our campuses, but at three other churches that we've been doing this in partnership with. We did 5 public events in addition to the weekends, and the last one of those with Preston Sprinkle was last night for students at Westgate, and I was there with some of our team, and then my two oldest kids as well, so it was great. It was, just a really, hopefully, for us, we never wanted this series to represent the end of a conversation. We wanted it to, in some ways, represent the beginning of a conversation, and just intentional ways where we can be clear and be kind, where we can once again restate the value that we want this to be a place where people can belong before they believe, and that the transformation of becoming who God's made us to be, that's a lifelong transformation, and we want to be patient with everyone in that. So, so I'm feeling pretty thankful that we're there. I'm also not preaching a normal sermon this weekend. We're doing this really fun panel. If you're listening to this, you know how fun it is because you already saw it. But I think like that means that some of the normal pressure I feel like on a Thursday is not here, which is great. Thank the Lord for that. And it's beautiful outside. I mean, just like Mark and I, we love talking to you. We love being on this podcast, but both of us would be rather riding bikes right now. Like, right? That's just maybe we should figure this out.
Okay.
We should figure out how with GoPros and microphones, we could do the podcast from bikes.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be cool? I feel like there's a way to do it.
There's got to be a way.
There's got to be a way to do it.
I mean, fiscal year 2024-25 is coming up. Let's I could work that into the budget.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
We would need like a leadoff person, I think, and maybe like a drone.
Yes.
But dude, that'd be sick.
Something you could have to think. A chase car and like a Vespa.
Yeah, something to think about.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yep. So anyway, so for all those reasons, it's been a good week. Very, very thankful. And looking forward to what's next for kind of, you know, Menlo message stuff this summer, you know, great stuff ahead.
Yep. So looking back over the past 5 weeks, what were some especially sweet moments for you, Phil? And what were some that were maybe not so sweet?
I mean, I think the sweetest moments for me in this series were people from the LGBTQ community in our church that felt invisible, like that's the language that they would use, who felt an invitation to sit down and have a conversation. Maybe it was with their campus pastor, maybe it was with a friend, maybe it was with another staff member, or honestly, quite a few with me. And people trusting me or trusting other people on our team with their story. And we're not going to like, at the end of it, it's not like, oh, this is all better. Like, no, this is just a safe place for you to be honest. And we can be clear that we hold to a traditional view of human sexuality and gender, and at the same time say, We're all broken. We all need Jesus. Mm-hmm. We all need the grace of God. We're not going to single out one in particular community. Mm. And so, yeah, that was just, those were really, really special stories. It was heavy, but a gift. And I know how big a deal it is for people to share those stories. So it was really fun to be able to like have some of those conversations and then have some of those very same people like email after a particular talk and say, hey, I heard really kind of how part of my story informed some of what you said or, you know, whatever. So that was great. Yeah. It was really, really good. And then I think, you know, some of the unique pain of this that, you know, my heart breaks for, and I hope we're rectifying a little bit, are people maybe that had been at Menlo for a while and didn't know that we held to a traditional view of human sexuality and gender.
Which was strategic before this.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, and I would say that's not just Menlo. Like, that's kind of intentional in the church world, is what I've called strategic ambiguity, where you just kind of go, oh, we just won't talk about it. And I think, yeah, it all of a sudden was like, we didn't change what we believed as a church, but we said it. Mm-hmm. And so I think sort of the bait and switch of that that people articulated, that was hard. And not even really in the LGBTQ community, just like people at our church. And it wasn't a ton, but it was enough that you're just like, oh, my heart breaks, I'm sorry. And, you know, we don't want this to be, this is not going to be every week at Menlo we talk about this conversation. But I do think figuring out how we, when we talk about biblical faithfulness and following Jesus, how do we continue to include language that we've learned together in this series? How do we continue to assume that LGBTQ people are in the room, just like we do with unchurched people, just like we do with single people, just like we do with married people, people with families? Like, how do we understand this is a part of our church? And so, anyway, I think some of those lessons are, they're hard-learned lessons, and my heart breaks for people that felt betrayed by that. So, I hope. You know, I think 20 years ago, 25 years ago, strategic ambiguity, maybe we've talked about this on the podcast, strategic ambiguity basically meant whatever the cultural assumption is what I assume you as a church believe. So 25 years ago, you know, gay marriage is not legal in America, and even like just overall public sentiment, especially by Christians, was not assuming like an affirming argument around marriage and sexuality. So when people, like I used to hear all the time, friends of mine, family members of mine that were LGBTQ that would say, hey, when we go to church, we don't need you to tell us that we think that God has a problem. Like, we know, you know, it's all we know. And I think now strategic ambiguity, because culture has shifted so much, the church, capital C, has really maintained a lot of the same posture, but culture's changed. And so the assumption of the cultural majority now, well, the cultural majority today is that in order to tolerate others, we must affirm their self-described identity. And so now it means, well, if you're a nice church and you're strategically ambiguous, I assume that you have affirming theology around gender and sexuality. And I get it. And it's not fair for us to not be clear about that. So hopefully this represented a step in that direction. But at the same time, not becoming cultural warriors, not being cultural capitulators, really being ambassadors of hope, and believing that God can do it, because I have heterosexual temptation, right? You have like we're none of us are perfect. All of us have to submit, all of us, to follow Jesus if that's what we've chosen to pattern our life after.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting when Preston Sprinkle was here for that event. He said, depending on where he is in the country, he'd have to preface the conversation in different ways, starting from maybe in the Midwest, super stereotypical here of just like, hey, there are actually gay people in your church, whether you know it or not, to here where it's just like maybe the majority of you like affirm and believe these things. So I thought that was a pretty interesting way to paint, even in today's times, depending on where you are, when your proximity in your the culture that you're that surrounds you, how that conversation can look different.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we live in such a like a weird and tribal moment that even if you're in a pretty like heavily secular progressive region, as we are in kind of Silicon Valley in the Bay Area, you can still go like, hey, yeah, but all my friends are Christians. They all see this the way I see it. I send my kids to schools that I make sure that they teach this the way they hang out with kids that, you know, and so your world can get really, really small. And I would just say like, beyond a shadow of a doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt, if Jesus' earthly ministry was taking place today, he would be hanging out with LGBTQ people every day. every day. And people who were nothing like Jesus liked Jesus, and he loved them. And so I think if our world is so small that this for us is more about a position than the people that it impacts, mm-hmm. we should make our world bigger. Mm-hmm. And I love that for us as a church, this series made our world bigger, not smaller.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the world bigger, and also our view of those around us bigger as well, because so much of what I hear and what I see is if someone does not agree with me, they are automatically evil and on the other team.
Totally.
And therefore, I should not, and it would be wrong for me to talk to them.
Right.
Which just breaks my heart in so many ways.
Yeah, well, it's not healthy or helpful, right? Mm-hmm. But we're all sort of getting subsumed, not just in kind of offline world, but especially online world. Mm-hmm. The algorithms are designed for mm-hmm. us to get more angry, because more angry means I'm going to become a part of this passionate mob for whatever my side is. The other side is evil and horrible. And I think what's so hard and challenging is mm-hmm. when it's the grace and truth of Jesus, when it's the conviction and compassion of Jesus, mm-hmm. There's not really a category in some of the stereotypical lanes that we think about for that heartbeat of Jesus, which just breaks my heart. You know, both sides, both extremes are sort of claiming the moral high ground, and I would argue neither extreme actually has the moral high ground.
Yeah. And what I've appreciated in a lot of, I think almost every message, if I think about it, was how you would directly not only call out one side, but another side as
right.
well, to say no one is totally. No one is safe from this.
Yeah,
no one
yeah.
is exempt from what we're,
yeah, yeah.
what we're saying.
I, you know, I think there's a way to do that mm-hmm. that just says, like, we're all terrible, so do whatever you want. And I don't think mm-hmm. that's the message of the Bible, right? It's
yeah.
The pursuit of holiness through deeper allegiance and connection mm-hmm. to the Lord, that we want the kingdom with the King. We want him to mm-hmm. be the Lord of our life.
Yep.
That call is like so beautifully universal. Like, we all need it.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a both-sidism that sort of just says, oh, you know, shrug emoji, like, go do whatever you want.
Sure.
And I think being able to kind of call balls and strikes and say, if you're in this extreme and you go, this is my people and those people are wrong, let me tell you maybe some blind spots. If you're in this extreme, you go, we're all right, they're wrong, let me tell you some blind spots. Mm-hmm. And it's not even like necessarily just like a, let's split the difference. I think a lot of times it's like, hey, there's pieces here mm-hmm. that are valuable and helpful, pieces here that are valuable and helpful. And you go, wait, I don't understand. We see this especially politically. We'll get into that in a few weeks, but
yeah, take a break, Phil.
Yeah, yeah, right. For real. I will. But in what now, just a couple weeks, we'll start a series called Smear Campaign, where some of these same themes will show up as we kind of diagnose the way we think about politics in our moment and why so much of this mm-hmm. sort of gets layered on top. Mm-hmm. You could actually argue that the sexuality conversation, not at an individual story level, but at a societal, how do we think about this and talk about this together? Mm-hmm. is actually a subset of mm-hmm. the political conversation.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think as I'm listening to you talk about not only the series that we just got out of, but the series that we're heading into, it was a conversation that we had when we were in a car or van or something coming back from drive, and we asked if basically if it's topical, like these are the things that you're passionate about. And your answer was more so just creating space to have conversations with difficult things.
Yeah.
And I think that if we were to look back over the past 5 weeks, I think you did a very good job at that.
Man,
I want to say thank you, because that's, as we've said to an extreme extent, this is not an easy conversation to have, because when you bring it up, it's either you're on my team or you're not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, it's so easy to have conversations that dehumanize people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think it's so easy to have conversations right now where, yeah, we're like just othering people constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's easy to avoid any nuance. And I think like one of the beautiful things about God's church at Menlo, it's not my church, not your church, God's church at Menlo, mm-hmm. is that like part of the legacy of this place is the capacity to be intellectually honest,
yeah.
to be able to walk into difficult conversations with nuance, to be able to hold to generous orthodoxy, but still have orthodoxy, you know? And I think those are increasingly unique attributes that I'm very, very thankful for.
Yeah, definitely. I'm also thankful for outside perspectives as well, that we could trust someone like Preston Sprinkle to come in and help lead not only an external event for the public, but also during the day. I don't know if you talk more about that, but what a special time it was for us to invite local churches here for specific talks around local church issues.
Yeah, we had you know, all the churches that were a part of the series, all their staff came here to Menlo Park, our broadcast location, and then some like church planters and other leaders in the community who honestly, in most cases, really couldn't probably provide staff development time like this for, you know, in some cases it's literally a solo church planter. And so hopefully it wasn't just like, hey, you get exposed to this resource, but like there's a bunch of people in the room that are trying to lock arms and do this well and have this conversation well. And like, let's meet you. Let's figure out how we can help you. That's really been the heart, even in kind of packaging this series and trying to give it away to other churches that, that it might find parts of it helpful. And so, yeah, I mean, it was everything from some teaching time and material around how do we pastor, shepherd, and care for LGBTQ people in our church and families for whom this is a part of their story, to, I mean, really legitimately hours of Q&A. I mean, the public events were, what, 2.5 hours? Preston spent 4 hours with our staff team. So I hung out with him for just a few minutes after the last, the last thing that he did at Westgate, just the other pastors, myself and Preston, like basically we went and got a beer. And I was like, how are you still up right now, dude? You're like, this is crazy, these couple days. And then he was going up and he's doing some stuff at Reality SF, in the city today. So so it's really cool. I think hopefully helpful in every category. I would say the like the public event that he did at Menlo Park was like one of the best like that that I've ever seen. It was so even-handed, so kind, so rooted in his own story and experience in the conversation. And it's a little tricky, right? This is kind of like what he does. It also requires kind of some nuance. But I would say if you're a part of Menlo and you weren't able to be at that, we're not able to just make that publicly available or like have it listed somewhere, but there is a link we can send you. So if you send Mark or myself a note, I'd be happy to send you that link, because it really was excellent. It was, and I think being able to have the first 5 weeks as a community to provide context and then this hopefully was even better.
And what I thought was really interesting was, obviously, I oversee our text in church number with the team there, and so I can see the questions that were getting sent in, whether that's for asking on this podcast or specifically for Preston. And the ones that were sent in were also ones that were asked in different ways in the room as well. So it's cool to see how our community was aligned in around what questions that we had and how just naturally that came up in part of the conversation itself.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of those are hopefully if you're having the conversation well, right, you're going to start bumping into those like personal, pastoral, practical, what do I do with this kind of questions?
Yep. Great. Well, we can get into some of the questions we have for today, and we'll start off with one that we've asked in a few different times. It's around marriage and around attending weddings, and Preston answered it as well during his talk. You've talked about it a little bit on the podcast as well, but we just want to give more space to this. So I don't know if you want to repeat yourself. I don't know if you just want to share a different perspective, but basically this person is writing in that they have a family member that is trans, and some of their other family members don't agree with them and say, we're not going to go to their wedding because that would be supporting homosexuality. So as us as a church, how are we supposed to respond in this situation? Do we go to the wedding? Do we abstain from it?
I mean, I think there's so many like follow-up questions and context. And so I think it's, I know that there are people that want to live without tension in these conversations. And it's just like, oh, they're, you know, this is not a biblical definition of marriage, therefore don't go to it. And Preston made this point too, and I think this is helpful. Like if that's you, if this is just like, how could you spend any time on the podcast? The answer is no, move on. I would say, like, make sure you're consistent, if that's your answer.
Oh, yeah, I do remember this.
Like, he used an example of, like, hey, it's Uncle Fred. Uncle Fred's on his third marriage. after getting divorced for, just any number of different things. And he's been living with this woman before they get married. It's a heterosexual marriage, but like it is not a biblical marriage, you know? And so if you're saying, hey, biblical marriage, one flesh union, one man, one woman, covenant relationship with God in the middle for a lifetime, and you're just like, anyone that falls short of that, I'm not going to your wedding. I would just say, like, let's make sure that we're consistent. And the work of, if this is someone in your life, how do you make sure that they know you love them, right, in the midst of that? And honestly, like, I think one of the really important questions is, do you love them? Yeah. Because God does. And I think if your instinct is to go, well, I don't want to go to their wedding because to me that feels gross, I would just say, like, man, what does it look like for you to process that well and to communicate to this person that you love them? If they invited you to their wedding, like if you're married, think about when you were inviting people to your wedding, what you hoped would happen, why you, there were people that could have gotten invited that you didn't invite. So somebody, you were on the like, should I invite or not invite list. They probably knew some of the tension we're talking about and they said, we're going to invite them anyway. So all that to say, I think you need to figure that out. I think you need to ask yourself the question, do they understand how you think about biblical sexuality and marriage? You know, like if somebody invited me to their same-sex wedding, I think they'd have a pretty clear understanding that I hold to a traditional view of marriage and sexuality, to the point that if it's not like, I mean, say it's like a Christian and a non-Christian getting married, like I would have just as many questions about attending that wedding as I would a wedding between two people of the same sex. So I think you just be consistent. Be consistent. Also, another one that Preston surfaced that I think is helpful is, would your attendance at the wedding communicate approval of the couple? And so I think that's probably more often the tension for me is that if I personally, like Phil, a pastor, show up at a wedding, whether I'm performing the wedding or not, because I wouldn't perform a same-sex wedding. If I just show up, there is going to be an assumption, like Phil's putting a stamp on it. That may not be true for you. You may go, well, hey, this is my nephew, this is my friend, this is my grandchild. They know my understanding of sexuality and marriage, and they know that I love them and that I'm taking every step I can to be in their life, even though I disagree with this. And, you know, if ultimately you're a follower of Jesus and you feel conviction to say, I don't think God wants me to go, then don't go. But I would say not going is a choice. Not loving is not a choice. Like if we're a follower of Jesus, whether we go to the wedding or not, I think is entirely within the realm of your decision-making choice. Whether or not loving your neighbor as yourself, that's not a choice. That's the core ethic of following Jesus. Yeah. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
I think that shows up. We've got to figure out ways to do that, even if we're not attending, whether that's a wedding or like a celebration event that you would say, I have a hard time doing that because of specific decisions or the way that person is or whatever. Like loving them, that's not a choice.
Yeah.
We are called to do that.
Yeah. I feel like I've spent a lot of time thinking about something similar to this, which is just like what I do and what my actions communicate. And I struggle with it for a long time because obviously like my heart might be for loving, you know, a person. And because I go to this wedding, that means, you know, do I care about what other people think about what they might think my attendance means?
Right.
And I still kind of struggle with that sometimes too, because I'm just like, I love this person and I want to go.
Right.
And that has no indication on everything else. But then I step into ministry and I have to run that through a different chain. And that might not be everyone's story.
100%.
But that was the journey that God has taken me on.
Right.
And it's been hard and trying. And so we're all on kind of on that spectrum of what is God calling us to communicate with what we're doing, whether it's in anything, honestly. Right. Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, also asking yourself the question, like, say you go, hey, I have no tension about going to someone's wedding that's a same-sex wedding. I mean, I would make the case of when we think about like what a biblical marriage is, it is a one flesh union of two mm-hmm. opposite sex people mm-hmm. for a lifetime with God at the center. So like something we can call anything else we want
yeah.
a wedding, but it's not, because like from a biblical perspective, sure. that's what marriage actually is. And I know like if you disagree with me, that sounds insane. I totally get that. But I think that one of the reasons that it would be really hard for me to attend, even people that I love, like people very close to me sure. who I've said no to. And again, it's hard for me to extrapolate and bifurcate like my role as a pastor and me as a person. And yeah. like that's
yeah.
in conversations like this, I want to acknowledge that's really messy. It's all spaghetti, man. It's wrapped up together. But I think when you have guests at your wedding, you want them excited for you.
Oh, sure.
You want them on the Absolutely. Dance floor. You want them mm-hmm. high-fiving you and saying congratulations. And even if I went because I loved someone, I couldn't do that. Mm. You know, like it just wouldn't. So I think that would be, even if showing, for me,
yeah.
even if for like showing up, I was doing it to love the person, I think by the end of the day, I think that there might be a feeling that they, and I wouldn't be like mean,
yeah.
but I'd be like, it's obviously you're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You're not able to celebrate this with us. I wish you hadn't come. Like, that's kind of my fear about it a little bit, right?
It's a very Phil perspective on yourself.
Yeah. So I think it's hard. It's a hard question, you know? And I think about it like, if one day one of my kids came out and was gay and said, I'm experiencing same-sex attraction. I'm going to pursue those relationships. You know, we're having all the conversations, doing everything we can. And, you know, fast forward the clock decades, they're going, we're getting married to somebody. Dad, would you come to my wedding? Like, I just want to be honest that there's, like, the answer I have today about, like, family members that I've had to navigate that conversation with or close friends that I've had to navigate is different than when it's, like, your own kids or, for you, maybe your own grandkids. Mm-hmm. So if it feels like this is just a overly reductionistic excuse like, oh, Phil, easy for you to say. It is easier for me to say than if that's your story. I'll be totally honest.
Yeah.
So I don't want to just, we've talked a lot in this series about how do we walk through this conversation with holding the right. tension. This is one of those areas. I think we just need to be honest that right. there's tension in the middle of it.
This makes my mind spin a little bit around the idea of holding and not holding Christians to a standard and holding non-Christians to a standard. So does this apply in non-Christian weddings? So like, would you attend a non-Christian wedding?
Dude, that's such a good question, man.
Or would, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because totally. Yeah, no, it's
on one, like we can extrapolate to whatever else we want,
right.
but if we're talking about not holding people that are Christians to a standard.
Totally agree, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's two non-Christians
mm-hmm.
getting married,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've attended those weddings.
Yeah.
I have too. I've attended those weddings.
I never thought about that until literally just now.
Yeah, like for sure. And they like have lived together before they were together, uh-huh. right?
Yeah.
So I think we just have to be honest that there's a level of hypocrisy in this if we're like, I will only attend,
right.
you know. Yeah. And so if you were to say, well, if it's a same-sex wedding and they don't claim to be Christians,
yeah.
would you go to it? Well, would you go to two heterosexual people who are not Christian? You know, yeah, I think it would be easier for me to say yes to that. I would still struggle mm-hmm. To like celebrate it.
Your version of marriage is not.
You got it. But I think
yeah.
Like in mm-hmm. the times that I've been at weddings with two, I'm thinking of one in particular right now, like two people who are not Christians living together and getting married, I was conflicted attending that wedding. Like I felt it. I think I would feel similar conflict. I think it's a great question.
Yeah.
I think it's a great question. And then, you know, obviously it gets more complicated when it's like, what happens if one is a Christian and one isn't?
Sure.
'Cause there's like very clear, like there's people that debate lots of things in the Bible. There's not a lot of debate around that. Like this idea of, hey, if you're a follower of Jesus and you're going to marry somebody, you should not be, the text of the New Testament says, you should not be unequally yoked, mm-hmm. which basically just means like, you should not, as a Christian, marry someone who is not a Christian.
Mm.
And again, I know all of this sounds crazy, but I would say that the world's version of sanity is not working. So we either say, Jesus, you get control of all of my life, including this really important aspect of it, or you know what, I'm going to kind of pick and choose, and it's only the things that I want to follow culturally that I'm going to follow. And you can make whatever decision you want, but I think the way of Jesus is the better way.
And the way of Jesus was not to get married.
Yeah, well, the personal decision of Jesus. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why, I mean, I think how we recognize even Paul, right, saying like, hey, like if you're looking for the better option in terms of ministry faithfulness.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are all very interesting needles to thread through. And how do you recognize what your own hypocrisy has been in the past? Mm-hmm. Be honest about that as you face present circumstances and future opportunities.
Yeah, interesting. And this next question, I don't know the answer to.
Yes.
To be honest, talking about past, present, and future, I don't know. So I'm equally as curious as our friend Doug here. With Menlo Church holding to a traditional theology, can openly gay individuals become members of the church? I understand and agree that we need to be welcoming and loving. Yes. Tough subject. Appreciate your leadership on this subject. It's helping me a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. So, you know, I used the language that's not mine. I'd heard it, and it's just really helpful. That we want to offer the widest welcome to the narrow way, right? Like that's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. The way of following Jesus is the narrow way. It says, wide is the path that leads to destruction. Most people go on to that one. Narrow is the way that leads to life. Very few go on to that one. We want to offer the widest welcome to the narrow way. And so I think that, you know, in terms of like, hey, would we let someone who's openly gay become a member at our church? Well, let me just redefine some terms here. Member at Menlo is what we call covenant partner. Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, it's a fairly extensive process. If you're trying to say yes to that and you're saying I'm in, like I believe what Menlo believes, I'm pursuing the same vision of following Jesus as Menlo is trying to help people walk in. Doesn't mean I'm perfect, but it means I'm headed there. You know, what gay has, you know, what gay means at its like just highest level is I'm romantically and sexually attracted to people of the same gender, not the opposite sex, or the opposite of the same sex, not the opposite sex. So, could someone who experienced same-sex attraction become a member of our church? I mean, if they experience temptation, if experiencing temptation is a disqualifier to becoming a covenant member, I got bad news. We don't have any members. Like that's. So I think the question becomes, are you asking experience temptation, but committed to either God transforming that desire, hopefully by prayer through a lifelong transformational process, or celibacy, where you would say, I'm committed to singleness for my life because of this? I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. If it's, I'm tempted, but I'm not choosing to live out of that, then I think we would say, yeah, that's not going to preclude you. If you agree to the theological paradigms that for us are within our what's called eco-tenets, mm-hmm. Which is bigger than this, by the way. But if you said, hey, I'm in a same-sex marriage, I don't agree with the traditional view of marriage and sexuality, can I become a member? Well, we would say, covenant partnership is probably not the right thing because we're going to ask you to agree to something in the process of covenant partnership that you don't agree with. And your involvement at our church as a covenant partner is going to be in line with the theology you don't agree with. So we want you to be here. We want you to be able to be involved, even find a place to belong. But there's always going to be this level, whether it's through leadership and involvement, say you go, hey, I want to like lead a life group, right? I'm in a same-sex marriage, and I want to lead a life group. I'd say, well, like when we do Wonderfully Made, part two, you know, whatever that is, that's going to be like a very hard conversation for you to lead if you disagree. Because all of a sudden now, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to be antithetical to what your core convictions are and what's true of your life? Or are you going to counter what's getting taught? Like that just, I think there are sort of these concentric circles, and whether it's covenant partnership or higher levels of leadership, there are going to be places, and it's not just for the LGBTQ community, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's for anyone that's functioning outside of what it means to follow Jesus. So if we sat down with someone and they were wanting to become a covenant partner and they were living with their opposite sex boyfriend or girlfriend and they weren't married, we would say, no, like that's a barrier for you. Or if somebody were sitting down with us and we found out they were like wildly unethical in their business practices, right? Like we're having conversations with people, and we're not trying to nitpick every detail of everyone's life, but we just don't want people to feel like they have to lie. And I think that there's a tension of if you say yes to this when you know it's not true, at some point it's going to be a significant problem. So that we can drop the link in the show notes, but there's a document from our denomination that breaks down the essential tenets, and that's like think like big categories, right? So like we think that that God's word is the authority of our confession. We glorify God by recognizing and receiving His authoritative self-revelation, both in the infallible scriptures of the Old and New Testament, and also in the incarnation of God the Son. We hold to the Trinity and incarnation, the two central Christian mysteries of the Trinity and the incarnation. We hold to God's grace in Christ as a component of something called Reformed theology. We hold to Reformed theology as a church. We hold to election and salvation, election for salvation and service, sort of this unique principle of Reformed theology, covenant life in the church, faithful stewardship of all life, and then within the faithful stewardship of all life, kind of recognizing some unique aspects of church. We live in obedience to the Word of God, that it doesn't mean we're perfect, but it means that the Bible's got some very big cautions for us. If we can live ongoing and unrepentant, I don't feel bad for and I'm not changing choices of sinfulness in my life. So I think it's a helpful document to be able to break down. One of the other ones for us as a church is that we're egalitarian. So some churches believe that there are certain offices within the church, certain roles within the church that only men can do, and then women are sort of kept in different roles. It's called complementarianism. We're egalitarian. So we believe that men and women can serve at all levels of our church in every role. So we have women who serve on what's called our session, which is like our board. Actually, the chair of our board is a woman. So I joke like she's my boss, right? And then we have men and women that serve at every area of leadership, lead worship, teach from stage, lead and manage people, right? So maybe for you, that would be a problem if you didn't hold to that. So some of these are like theological understandings. And then some of them are, hey, the Bible has a pattern, a narrow way of what it means for me to walk with God, and I will never do that perfectly this side of eternity. But if I am walking in ongoing and unrepentant sin in some area of my life, I hope that the covenant partnership process is a place where we can have really meaningful, honest conversations and see God show up. Mm-hmm. So, long answer to a short question. The short answer is, if you're experiencing temptation, welcome to the club. That does not preclude you from covenant partnership. If you are succumbing to temptation and you feel no conviction about that and disagree with the nature of it even being a sin, it probably is. Covenant partnership is probably not the right next step for you.
Yeah, man. So many big words in there, Phil.
I know. Yeah. It's a whole thing. I'm just skimming it.
As you were reading through that document, I'm just like, can we make this more like My Neighbor Friendly?
Sure. Yeah, totally.
or do episodes on like what these are actually saying.
Sure, totally. We should. Yeah, that's okay. A good idea.
I'd love to do that.
Yeah, incarnation, Trinity.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, any word in there that was longer than three syllables, you probably need to explain.
Yeah. I use a platform to help with writing called Grammarly.
Yeah.
It's super helpful.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show. Yeah. Oh, I wish, dude. And every week, Grammarly sends you an email, and it's like, hey, you are more productive than umpteen percent of Grammarly users. You are more accurate than umpteen percent of Grammarly users. And because of my job and what I write, it's like, you use more unique language than 99% of other Grammarly users. That's pretty much what it says every week. So I get it.
That's so funny. All right, Phil, last question for today. In what ways can we continue this conversation despite the series being over?
I think that if you have someone in your life that is LGBTQ and you have not sat down in a judgment-free zone and just listened to them, you should do that. You're like, well, I need them to know. No, just listen. Because I think something that we often fail to realize is that no one who's LGBTQ asked to be. And most of the time, even if they're not Christians, They've asked God to not be. It is easier in our culture to not be LGBTQ than to be LGBTQ. So I think just saying, hey, would you tell me your story? Tell me about when you first discovered that you felt this way, whether that's gender dysphoria, same-sex attraction. You know, they're going to probably walk into it already aware of the fact, if you're a Christian, that maybe you have some tension around this. And you can say, our church is talking about this. I'm learning a lot right now about how to, you know, hold to what I believe and love people well. I'm not trying to offer advice or fix you. I just want to know you. Mm-hmm. And in whatever way you can, I think the more we do that, the better. I think that Jesus would do that. So, yeah. And then I hope that in the months and years to come, if you see someone on a weekend at your campus, and you're like, I wonder if they're LGBTQ, before you make any statements or actions based on whether or not you think they are, just choose to be like a welcoming and loving person. Like, choose to love them like you would love anybody else, because they're created in the image of God with infinite dignity, value, and worth, and God's crazy about them, and Jesus died to save them. And I think the more our campuses and communities can offer that widest welcome to the narrow way, I think the more we look like Jesus.
Yeah, that's so good. Anything else, Phil?
Just thank you. Yeah, I would say if you've been with us in this podcast or been journeying with us in this series, I know it's hard. Like, this is one of those conversations that it's like, if you're a parent, you're like, this is a whole new vocabulary. Do I really have to learn this? And the answer is, yeah, kind of. Like, I've got little kids. I get it. This is a lot. And you're like, I've got a job, and I've got responsibilities, and my calendar's full. And now you're saying, go read this book and listen to this podcast, and you're talking about this issue. I think the more that we stay aware of what's happening in the world in a non-hyperbolic, non-extreme way, I think the better we're prepared to love our kids, the better we're prepared to engage our kids in the world that they live in. You know, Preston mentioned this. It's approaching 30%. Gen Z is approaching 30% of self-identification in the LGBTQ community. So you go back to Gen X, I think it was 1X or 1%. Yeah. So you're like, well, are my kids really even facing this? Yeah, I mean, like, it's 1 in 3. Like, this is a shocking number. So I'll plug the book one more time from Mark Yarhouse, Talking to Your Kids About Gender Identity. Fantastic book, very helpful, very practical. If you listen to this series, you're like, I still don't agree with you. Man, thanks for still listening, really sincerely. And I hope that we get to continue to learn from the scriptures together and let God shape and work on us and mold us. But if the vision of following Jesus looks just like the vision I think it would look like, I would say I may have reimagined Jesus in my image and the image of Western culture in 2024, and I should be careful of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of my biggest takeaways from this series is, despite what we've been talking about, just a higher call to a holier way, whether that's sitting down and listening and not interjecting with opinions, whether that is really digging deep into why I believe what I believe, and if that aligns with, you know, this or that. And so I think for me, I'm definitely going, and I'm glad that these resources aren't going away, because they're definitely going to be things that I'm going to have to look back and sort through. And so what menlo.church/wonderfullymade isn't going anywhere. That link is live forever, probably.
Yep.
And so I just think that the kind of the conviction that I'm feeling around, just like, what does it mean to be more formed towards how Jesus wants me to be?
Yeah.
Whether that's applying to this conversation or XYZ conversation.
Totally.
It's just been really convicting. So,
I appreciate that. And I think, in as much as, especially for those of us who are like cisgender heterosexual, in as much as we can be honest in these conversations about the growth edges where God is still working on us, both personally with those that we love and with people that we're talking about who are LGBTQ, to say, like, I'm not perfect, and not in like an abstraction, like, oh, here's something that God is actively working on in me, And I might want to like create a gradation between where I struggle and what I've let be okay in my life and how I see your life, but God doesn't. And so like the foot of the cross and the transformation available is available to all of us.
Awesome. Well, if you want that link to the Preston's Sprinkle event, we'd be happy to send that to you. Or if you want to continue to ask questions, man, we'd love this part of hearing from you and hearing what you and people in your community, what people in your family are thinking about, and we'd love to try to help. And so you could text us at 650-600-0402. And then, Phil, I want to end with one more question, and this was actually from our Preston Sprinkle event last night with our kids and students. And yes. This is from a student, and this question was, if I steal snacks from church, is that a sin?
Yeah, Preston answered the question. What did he say?
I thought these questions were so awesome. Yeah,
it was
awesome. Amazing.
Preston said it depends on the snack, I think. I like that. What's funny to me is like they were giving away snacks.
I know.
And I'm like, do you think that you're stealing? Like they're giving it to you. Yeah. So we shouldn't steal. That feels obvious. Jesus would say if we covet something that's not ours, we like long for it, we rationalize why we should have it, we have bitterness for the other person who does. Actually, that's already a problem in our heart, that the pursuit of Jesus is not skin deep, it's soul deep. So don't steal stuff. But if you need snacks, come to Menlo on the weekend. We got tons of donuts.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you.
Exactly.
Yep.
Thanks, Phil.
Of course.
Well, have a great week, everybody. We'll see you soon. Let us know if you need anything. Have a great week.
Thanks, everybody.